Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and as always, I'm joined by the got beat by an over Hosley type experimental, Danielle Caroli. What's up?
Just kidding. I was waiting to figure out how long it was going to be before that got mentioned on the podcast. I didn't realize I should have set my timer for that one. I thought I was a good 5 minutes until this was brought up, not 5 seconds, but that's okay. How are you, John?
I'm doing great, Danielle. I came out slugging just like Rocky against the Russian Drakov. It was great. We had the experimental Opal against the big old Sonotype Dottie. We came up victorious in one ring. The other ring we did not. But we're not talking about that ring. We're talking about the one that we actually beat her in. So,
isn't it amazing how stories can change from one ring to another?
But I sure can.
No, congratulations.
You as well.
Opal looked beautiful. As I said to you very quickly after you won, I did wish you congratulations, and it was very, very Opal looked amazing, so well deserved.
The Over Hosleys have really come a long way.
They're getting there. They really are. Yes. I'm super happy with the grade up process for that breeding, and man, but the doe Lisa that she beat is a super powerful sonotype that just happens to have a dot on her side, black dot. Oh. And it was cool. I think it's going to be an interesting national show this year, Danielle.
I think it's going to be great. And it was also a really good, I mean, I was just excited to get back in the ring and get my does out for the season. Getting Dottie out there, regardless of whether or not she was best of breed or second to the champion of that ring, was a real true kind of testament to, or not, maybe not testament, that's not the right word, but it felt like a real feat in its own mind. Just getting that doe back into the ring just made all the curse words and frustrations worth it for her. So that was ultimately what that was about in the end for me. It was just being able to come back into the show ring with actually two does that have been sitting in my barn and just looking pretty but not milking for a year or two. Being able to kind of bring them out really just makes my show string feel complete again and just adds that little bit of maturity that we haven't had in the last couple of years, because for one reason or another, we've had some barn bums, and we still have barn bums, but they're just different barn bums. It was good. It was just, it made me really happy.
Yeah. Well, again, congratulations. You got a new finished permanent champion there. So that's awesome.
We did. Mm. Yes. On another doe, we got a new permanent champion and we got a leg on another doe. So life was good.
Yeah.
First, I'm going to introduce our guest because I can't wait any longer. Then we'll talk about show season even more here, because we've kicked off. I've got two shows under my belt. Another one coming up. You've got one from yesterday, Danielle. First of all, on today's episode, we are joined by Lisa Ham Begley of the Begley Troubled Acres Herd. Lisa and her family have a herd of Nubians in Ohio, where she focuses on production, type, and creating beautiful does. Her herd is well known for that strong ability to milk and compete in the ring with outstanding production, with top animals at the national shows, many animals appraising excellent, and so much more. But today, We are going to actually focus on something that she does that most dairy goat breeders underutilize, using boar bucks on does to create market crosses. Welcome to the show, Lisa. It's so awesome to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I don't know about, you know, being all that you just said, but thanks.
All that and a bag of chips, ma'am.
Okay.
No, we were, I mean, we'll kind of get into it in a little bit, but just to on that comment, we were kind of putting together everything and I was like, there's another 90, there's another this, there's, and just the pic, you know, pictures of what we see with your herd. And we'll definitely get into that later, but well deserved on the accolades that we mentioned.
Lisa, are you showing much these days?
Yes, I haven't. This coming weekend, I will be my first okay. for the year. Yeah, I chair that one. So it's a busy week before we get.
Well, Memorial Day weekend, too.
Yes, yes.
I went out not, well, 2 weekends in a row, this weekend that we're recording on now, and last weekend. And last weekend, we went to Connecticut for the first time for a show. And we walked away with a new pending permanent champion, a 2-year-old first freshener, Vi, and a doe with a dry leg. Couldn't be any happier. I think it was, cool. You know, we were walking in hoping that we did okay, but we weren't right. expecting anything. So it was cool to see.
And speaking of those Oberhasli, that was the talk of the town, that the Oberhasli show in Connecticut was just absolutely breathtaking to see. And kind of as Lisa mentioned earlier, and I mean, I've been showing goats for years, but we've always kind of been blessed to have a really competitive Oberhasli program in the area, but it is true across the country that breed is developing and developing fast. And then when you see what they put out there and the quality of animals, and you think back to 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and what was even that national champion level, and what is just coming into the ring now, not even on a national scale, but in that regional scale of here's just the local show. It is absolutely breathtaking. And what everybody was saying that Oberhasli show in Connecticut was just the coolest thing to see based on the competition and the animals there.
Yes, I've actually been quite impressed the past 5 to 8 years, I guess, on how well and quickly they have, you know, succeeded. There's several herds in Ohio that, you know, are just outstanding. So.
Oh, you got them in spades there. That's for sure. It used to be that Oberhasli breeders, they'd show their goats and they'd get, you know, if they were lucky enough, they'd get their grand champion or even reserve. And that was it for them for the day. They'd stand in that best in show lineup and they're thinking, well, you know, the judge is never going to pick us. But now when an Oberhasli breeder wins, depending on, you know, the goat, obviously, but you walk in there and you're like, so you're saying there's a chance, like there's a possibility here. And they're getting picked more and more for best in show than they used to. That's for sure.
Right. There's not many in Ohio as far as breeders, but the quality is very high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got about 3 or 4 that come straight to mind. That's for sure.
Yeah.
This week at our Eastern New York Dairy Goat Classic, I went and showed, I only brought a 2-year-old recorded grade, and she went grand and best of breed in one ring and reserve in the other. So that was awesome. And then I brought juniors and I got a leg on an intermediate kid with a recorded grade Oberhasli type. So I was happy. I mean, we had a good weekend. So walking away happy, looking forward to the Memorial Day show. Danielle, you're judging Memorial Day this year, right? This is your year of judging for Memorial Day.
This is my year of judging. I always joke that when you become a judge, you basically have decided or committed to judging Memorial Day weekend every year and trying to find the balance. I try and now judge a year, show a year if I can judge a year. And so next week, I will be on the road judging and not going down to our local Memorial Day show, but I'm very excited to be going and judging the show. So it's well worth it, and it'll give my girls a break since we got them out this weekend.
Yeah, you're like a divorced dad in the show. The Memorial Day show is your kid, and if you're lucky, every other year you get custody.
Exactly. We're on an odds and even year custody schedule for the holidays.
There's not much ad good news for the week, Daniel. I think we can jump right in, right?
I think we should.
All right, well, Lisa, again, as we mentioned in the introduction, today we're going to be focusing a lot on the fact that you breed some of your animals to boar for meat crosses, which, by the way, I have been told so many times that I say boar wrong. Is it boer or is
Just
it boar?
bored. Bored.
Thank you. That's what I say. Okay, perfect. So moving on. Moving on. We want to talk about that, obviously, but can we also get kind of an introduction of you and your herd for people that are listening that might not know who you are?
Well, I'm just Lisa Bagley with Troubled Acres Farm. Our first goat was bought in 92, and of course, it was my daughter's 4-H goat. We were in 4-H for several years. And then I finally bought a percentage buck in 94 because a lot of the kids in our, in the county couldn't make weight with their dairy weather. So that's basically how the boars started. And I just did it just to get a little bit more meat on them so the kids could, be respectable in the ring.
And then your dairy goats, when did that blossom? Kind of tell us the history of your dairy goat herd and how it got to where it is today.
Well, in 92, we bought one recorded grade doe. A funny story on that one. We left church and ran out of gas as we were going to get this doe. We were so excited. Finally got the doe, and the one lady that was kind of mentoring me, we were looking at the doe after I bought it, and she had, two teats on each side, and she clipped a teat on each side, and I had no clue what she was doing. I thought it was okay, and so the first show that I went, Harvey Considine was the judge, and
Oh,
yeah, and when he lifted up her legs, he was like, "Oh, you did a good job clipping those teats, extra teats." And I was, I still didn't know, and I was like, "Well, thank you." And so he put me, of course, at the end of the line. And after being at
wow.
the end of the line a couple times, I realized I need to start learning about these goats. So then I started, a couple years after, started, trying to buy, or beg and borrow breedings and just, breeding up from there. I don't know about how long, I have a long way to go to be, truly competitive, but I don't know how long it's been since I've, done decent in a ring.
What is your breeding philosophy in terms of breeding your dairy goats, and what are you striving for these days with them?
Perfection.
Same.
Yeah. I started off with trying to get the best mammary that I could. And I started losing size. So then I started looking for bigger goats. And then the top lines were kind of wonky. So then I realized I was just going to have to, work on everything. So top lines and, a nice, front end, straight legs, angular rear legs, and a high and wide secure mammary is what I mainly look for.
So then throw in the ADGA performance programs. How does that influence your herd and
Big time.
particularly?
Big time. When I first started doing LA, my first appraiser was Sam Whiteside, and that's when I had the four-teated goat, and so therefore I didn't do very well. But then after I started getting better goats, which still wasn't good goats, Eric Germain and John White, one year with Eric and the next year with John White, was our appraiser. And I just cannot, say how much they have influenced me and teaching me on, what a good goat looks like or should be. I took every bit of their advice in, and they are the reason I am where I am now.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense. And where you are now is pretty impressive. It's a herd that's winning in the ring. It's pulling those strong does with permanent, having the permanent champions, having the SG animals, the superior genetics animals, when that was being calculated. And we will get back to a day. I'm hopeful that we will be able to say we have superior genetic animals again,
Right.
but
Nice.
you're dealing with animals that had these beautiful milk records and beautiful, or you are dealing with these animals that have these beautiful milk records and strong production and type as well, and consistency, which we're not really talking about it, but we mentioned it that this you are a Nubian breeder as well, and so that consistency is often very hard to
Yes,
get
it is.
in that
Yes.
Nubian herd. So
Yeah.
we kind of joke on this podcast that we don't really talk numbers, but I do want to kind of start to paint a little bit of picture of your herd dynamic to kind of lead us into the next thing. So this isn't a give us a concrete number. We need to know that you have 75 or 77 animals in the barn. But what does your herd kind of look like in terms of the numbers, the number of milkers, the number of dry yearlings, the number of kids? And to kind of follow up on that, how are you working to keep your herd numbers in check?
Right now, I have 14 milkers, five retired adult does, six dry yearlings, and I cannot tell you how many doe kids I have out there right now. I'm in the process of sorting through them and that, but probably 18 to 20 of those right now. I like to try to keep 10 doe kids. That's kind of varied back and forth. But in years past, it would really be nothing for me to drop anywhere from 100 to 150 kids a year because I had a boar herd along with the dairy herd. But as I've gotten older and wiser, I've reduced those numbers down to just one boar buck and then used them on my dairy does to sort through and you know, because if the doe doesn't fresh the way I want her to fresh, then I've lost nothing because I can sell the boar kids like right now, and then I ship her to either, you know, as a pet milker to somebody or she goes to the yard. But I have had 73 kids hit the ground this year. So I've reduced my numbers a lot, but a lot of those, majority of those were boar kids. Probably half, maybe a little over half was boar kids that were they hit the ground this year.
When you're planning to breed to boar and either crosses or just, you know, boar kids straight up, are you trying to like look to the future as in like how many you're going to try to retain each year? Like, is that part of your plan?
No, my plan strictly is I breed all. You know, first time fresheners and sometimes second fresheners to the boar. That way
Okay.
that I'm not challenged in, you know, thinking that, oh, well, this one's going to be better. I'm done playing that game. Like she said, there's a little joke that you had to have 20 Nubians to get one good one. And you know, years ago, that used to be true. I mean, I pr produced a lot of crappy Nubians. Their memories were just junk. And, you know, and thinking, oh, the next generation was going to be okay, and they weren't. So now I just, you know, only breed my good memoried, good structured does to the dairy, and everything else gets bred to the boar. And if she doesn't fresh the way I want to, then she just goes, plain and simple. And I don't have to worry about retaining any kids and then being disappointed again the next year.
That makes a lot of sense. And you also keep a lot of your doe kids and kind of freshen them before you decide. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you keep a lot of your doe kids and then freshen them before you decide if they have a place in your herd. You're not really selling a lot of doe kids, correct?
I used to, but now I'm at a comfortable part in my life where I am starting the past probably a year and a half, 2 years of selling doe kids. I never would because I didn't feel right because if she didn't fresh with a nice memory, I felt that I was screwing the customer. I didn't want somebody being upset because the doe didn't fresh the way they wanted to. But now I'm seeing daughters and granddaughters out of the majority of the does that I'm selling. And so I feel more comfortable selling doe kids.
Now, speaking of your customers, how does your selling your crosses work? Are you selling them weaned or at auction? Where is your market?
My market is as soon as they're born, you come and get them.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Okay, continue. Tell me more.
There is, I have a couple people. There's been a couple out-of-staters that I will retain, but usually I try to plan everybody's kid at one time as far as the boars are concerned. So I have a couple out-of-staters that have anywhere from 5 to 10, reservations. And I will hold them until they get the numbers they want, and then they come and get them. But I have a couple customers here that as soon as they're born, I text them and say, "She's kidding. Get ready." And they're usually here as I'm drying them off and throwing some colostrum out. And then they part.
What?
Yep.
I'm
That's how
jealous. I'm so jealous.
Yep, they're gone. I don't have enough for Easter or anything. They just go. Be gone.
So you're setting up these customers way in advance, right? Like you've got a clientele that probably have been returning year after year for years.
Yes, correct. And the one lady that comes and gets them, of course, she takes them home and then she raises them up and weans them and then she sells them to kids in her county. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, I'd say so.
That really is. And so is there, I mean, because I think about the Northeast and it's slightly changing, but even at our county fair level, we're just starting to see boar come in again because there's a few 4-H'ers who are kind of starting to compete again in that market goat community. But even in that aspect, we really don't even have that many meat goat herds in the area. Not to say that, I mean, we do have a crazy demand for goat meat, but what is that? What does Ohio look like in terms of the demand and kind of that customer base? Is it
It's crazy. There are some high quality, expensive boar herds in Ohio, big time. Very competitive. And they sell higher percentage in purebreds, and they go for a lot of them go for high dollar, and usually because they're going to sales. I don't understand why the dairy goat people can't get into the sale aspect. These boar people, it's nothing to sell. Have a sale 2 or 3 times, during kidding season, or weaning season, I should say. And these boars are going for, a couple thousand on up, just as show wethers and show does.
Yeah, and those online sales go on for hours and hours and hours. I don't know how they do it.
And the semen they sell out of the box. I mean, go for outrageous price. It's a killer to watch and think. I'm happy for them, really are. They're doing a great job, but why can't we get on that,
So
think
true.
we're getting there slowly but surely. There's a few people out there that are trying new things and yeah, I think we'll get there. It's going to take time, unfortunately, with everything with dairy goats.
I think mainly it's, and I'm not saying it's easy to raise a meat goat, but it's easier to feed and maintain a show boar goat than it is a dairy goat because, either she's a good doe or she's not, or either he's producing great daughters or not. I think there's a, the scale is tipped much easier and better for the board people as far as being able to sell and get better money. Because, you know, if you're a good feeder and a fitter, then you can, you know, make lots of money. But you, the proof is in the pudding with the dairy goats.
No, it's so true. And it adds in the fact that with kind of economies of scale and return, and also the just general ideas and fighting that idea of is it dairy strength, or you kind of back to that dairy character. And this is a whole nother conversation, but when it was dairy character versus dairy strength, and was she frail or was she
Right. Yeah.
underfed, and the management there, where it is much easier to kind of throw, and this is totally putting it lightly and making something that is much more complicated very kind of lightweight, but like throwing feet at something, going, okay, it's gaining weight, we're good, it's getting to that finish weight, and versus our is your animal and the dairy goat in this athletic shape, kind of all of these different things like that adding in a whole nother aspect of it. And plus the fact that you have a boar industry where, because they are terminal projects, you can have a project more or less for spring to summer, show it and be done, versus something that needs the keeping the genetics
Right.
and maintaining that throughout the year. On
I
kind of
will
a
say,
oh.
I will say though, the boar genetics have really gotten a lot nicer and better too. More muscular. Genetics are actually there. Instead of just feeding and making the goat look fat, not really fat, but muscular. The genetics are there because when the kids are hitting the ground, there's the majority of them, they're already muscular. I mean, I've seen some outstanding young stock in some of these Ohio herds because I'm there. I ultrasound some of these herds out here, and I see them at a young age, and they're just my jaw just drops. It's like they're outstanding. They're already tons of muscle on them.
I have a question, and this is kind of going off, but it came to my mind, and I just want to ask, do you think, in terms of being able to sell those boar cross kids so quickly, do you think it benefits you that you are using, that they're being crossed with the Nubian, and so they're getting the correct ears for that, or correct or close to correct ears for those boar crosses, or kind of the coloring is usually pretty similar to the boar, or is it just that there's such a demand that you could be breeding in, you know, crossing togs in with your boars and probably still have the same success?
Well, the Newman is more of a multi-purpose animal. La Mancha is not far behind. I've had a few La Manchas that I've bred to the boar, and I have requests for those. At the moment, I don't have any, but I have. But because the Nubian is more of a multi-purpose animal, I think they do better crosses with the boar than they do the Swiss breed. I think they're a little bit more. The Swiss breeds are just to me a little bit more longer, lankier. Not quite the natural muscling that the Nubians would have.
So to follow up on that, and this is just again kind of the conversation and as we're going, but does that ever influence the Nubians you're keeping, knowing you have, I mean, I bottle feeding kids is probably my least favorite thing about raising dairy goats. And the idea that I could be very selective in which does I'm having kid out bottle kids, and then I have this market of people that come and take all the extras, and it's like, here, there's no sleepless nights, there's no waking up and feeding them, is very, very appealing to me right now. So does that ever influence kind of the dairy goat herd in your herd about what you're keeping to create more of that cross?
I'm not focusing on what the cross is coming out to look like.
Okay.
My focus is breeding and seeing what that doe is going to look like after she freshes. And then if she's good enough to go to the dairy the next year.
When you're breeding these does, are you thinking in the back of your head, oh, I'm going to keep one or two and put in my own freezer?
Always, yes.
So how many do you think you're processing every year for your freezer?
Let me see. I processed, I think, two last year. Not myself personally. Years ago, I used to. My husband and I used to process our own. It just got to where it was too much for us. But now we have somebody else do it for us. But I did two last year. I don't know if I did two the year before. There was a couple years that I didn't get any processed, only because if you remember, every processor was booked
Oh,
because of
yeah.
COVID and all that. So I couldn't get anything in. But years ago, years ago, I would have one, maybe two. And if I didn't have any good enough kids, if I had a fat doe that just wasn't producing or wasn't doing anything, I didn't hesitate to send her either. If you don't work on my property and you don't look good, you go. So you either go to the yards, you go to a pet buyer, or you get eaten.
Boy, I'd be in trouble. All right, well, I gotta ask this question here. What's your favorite goat recipe?
Well, I don't have a actual recipe. I have pretty much everything I make or I have processed is into burgers. So we have, chili, spaghetti, and we'll eat goat burgers and stuff like that. Years ago when I did have the boar herd, we would roast goat and we would have, picnic or party here at the house and we would roast a whole goat. One year we had we were invited to the Nigerian no not Nigerian it was the American Goat Association nationals or something like that, and
So
they had it,
AGS.
yes, they had it in Ohio. This was many years ago, and they asked us to roast a goat, and we did. We had goat chili and we roasted a goat there for them. And it went over. It was great. The judges
Yeah.
loved it. They were, everybody, there was no food left over. It was gone. I love roasted goat, but we haven't done that in a long time either. So,
Now, when you're getting this, when you're getting goats processed, are you just, is it straight up goat, or are they, I know some processors, they'll like mix in some pork fat or something like that. Are they doing anything like that with your stuff, or are you just straight up just ground?
it's straight up brown goat. I don't think they're
Okay.
mixing it. If they are, they're not telling me about it.
Well, they have to. It's illegal if they don't,
Okay,
so.
so no, I don't. So they haven't been. So yeah, it's
Okay.
just ground goat.
No, I know
It's our
some
favorite.
processors, like when I harvest a deer, I'll ask them to put some pork fat in there,
Okay.
a little bit of pork. But for the most part, a lot of times it's just straight up too, so.
Sometimes I'll have like one whole goat made into summer sausage, and we absolutely love that.
I
We
bet.
can't for that. Yeah, we love goat here.
That sounds delicious. And I feel like it's one of those things, and I sometimes even fall into that you just go, oh my God, it's my baby goat. And then you grow them out, and people are like, how could you eat them? But then you grow out these animals, and we always did the same thing with the pigs and the cows, but we just never, I think by the end of it, you just the extra goat kids, because there's always just so many, you don't want them on the grant property and to raise them out, but so many people do and have success with it.
I don't have one bit of problem with
Yeah, exactly. And it's such a weird mentality, and I feel like it is very exclusive to the dairy goat industry, because you
Yes.
certainly don't see it in the dairy cow industry. They are very happy to send cull cows out, and maybe it is because what you feed your cull cow, a cow that's not producing, is just gonna start sinking money down the drain very, very quickly.
Yes.
And some people can be like, oh, well, it's just a little bit for this goat. But I have had some times where even I go, why the heck am I worried about selling animals to pet homes? Because then that just comes back and bites you in the butt.
Yes.
And you're dealing with animals who are not fed and
Right. Have sent a lot of decent dairy does, milkers to the yards. Just because I get tired of my goat's not milking like you said it did. Well, what are you feeding it? Bread? I get tired of that. If somebody shows me that they're truly interested in learning, if they're a newbie, I'm more than willing to work with them and sell them something. But nine times out of 10, I will honestly just ship a decent doe to the yard just so I don't know where she's at and never have to hear from her again. It's sad because I feel that some of my genetics could go for a nice 4-H, kid. A lot better than what my daughter started off with, but it's time consuming and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of animals that I've sold thinking that they went to awesome homes and just to find out that they either look like crap or never to be heard from again. So it probably wasn't a great situation. So knowing that you can ship them off and most likely 95% of the time contribute to the food chain, then that leaves you sitting pretty happy.
Well, our yards over here, our stockyards, they have like two separate, I don't want to call it sales, but they're listed as, they can go back into population or their
Terminal.
terminal. Yes. So we can mark them one way or the other.
Okay, well, speaking of terminal, I mean, in bringing in boar, there is the reputation that because boar breeders are breeding terminal animals, CAE and CL are not always on their radar. What tips do you have for bringing in a clean boar?
Oh, you'll be selective on who you buy from. I don't have to say that my first purchases of the boar and even the dairy goat was not a good one for somebody that didn't know anything about goats. Of course, I bought my first couple of goats that I did buy. They were, CAE positive. The first percentage buck that I bought, he was not here on the property very long because not long after I brought him here, he's got a lump on his jaw and I called the vet. Vet comes out, says, yep, it's CL. So it didn't break open, but he said, best thing for you to do is get rid of him. So I took him straight to the yards. Then, of course, I had to teach myself again what a healthy herd is. So then I had to start going to different people's houses and look. I looked at their herd. I just didn't look at the animal I was buying. And I have a good rapport with one lady that raises bucks for me. Usually, as soon as they're born, I usually come and get it. But I've known her herd to be clean, so now she's raising one right now for me, a weaned one. So I keep a buck for a few years, and then I move him, and then I get a younger one, just for personality and attitude reasons, because sometimes they can get pretty pushy and
Oh yeah.
not want to get along with the dairy buck that they're with. So
Yeah, for
but
sure.
I have had run into that kind of stuff early on in my years of doing goats. I let everybody know when they first start buying, you got to look at the herd, not just the animal that you're buying.
Is that changing in terms of the boar industry? Is it changing that they are becoming more conscientious about CAE and CL in your opinion, or is it just
I feel so because they come to me for recips and they say, and we know that you have a clean herd. So I know that they're being conscious about it. The two places that I go and do ultrasounds for, I know that their herds are nice. And they're very conscious on CAE and CL as well. I mean, it hits their bottom numbers too. They can't, present a CL infested animal at one of those expensive sales. So, they have to start being conscious about it. Years ago, they weren't, but yeah, I do feel that they've come a long way with their health.
That makes a lot of sense because I kind of think in terms of, and I'm not calling out the Nigerian Dwarf breed, but so often I feel like the standard breeders are saying, okay, I test for CAE and or CL free herd. We haven't dealt with that, or we, test everything. Yonis, and I mean, we had Dr. Houlihan on the podcast as well to kind of talk about those tests and the merits of behind those tests. And the standard breed practice, I feel, is very much CAE is what we're concerned about. But then the Nigerian dwarf breeders, biosecurity from the get-go was always such a important thing for them. And I think it's kind of changed the conversation in the dairy goat world, but also to kind of create a better market, they were always trying to up the biosecurity and saying, okay, we test for this and we test for this because they could command a market, they could be a little bit more selective and there's more value. And so when there is more value in a boer goat and you can say, yes, he's pretty and yes, this buck is going to do everything for you, but oh, also he's coming from a clean herd, it just ups his value that much more. And maybe you can, when you're on that online auction, you're not going to go, oh, well, is he going to infect my herd or is he going to cause these issues? And so the need is there and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think they've come a long way. Years ago, they weren't that concerned with it. Yeah, the majority of them was just they were, bringing them in from Texas, trying to sell, make a quick buck, selling percentage bucks, and and winning in the rings. But since they've come such a long way with their the quality of the animal, they've come a long way with the health of the animal as well.
That makes a lot of sense. So now I want to ask you, because you mentioned you're bringing in a boar herd sire and you have this kind of relationship with somebody that you're constantly going to them for that next herd sire when you're rotating them in and out. I think back to my days of raising beef cows and some of the things that were valued in the beef cow for, your selection of your bull, was it a first freshener bull that was going to give you calving ease? Was he going to do a weaning weight? There's all these different things that they select in terms of the males in livestock. Is it, beef cows, boar, goats? When you're cognizant that you're breeding these bucks to your dairy goats, and for you and your herd, you're breeding them to your younger dairy goats. Are there certain traits you look for in that boar herd sire that maybe somebody that wasn't breeding crosses and is just breeding boar to boar wouldn't necessarily look for? Like, are you looking for a tinier animal? Are shoulders a thing? What kind of goes on in your thought process for that?
I'm just looking for correctness mainly when it comes to that. Really, that's about it. I mean, I'm just looking for something to breed to my dairy does. I want a good quality, but because I'm selling them as, 50 percenters, and as soon as they hit the ground, I'm not really concerned with how well muscled they are or how structurally correct they are. I'm just using them just to put kids on the ground to get rid of them.
We have discussed this idea a bit on the podcast, but if you subscribe to the philosophy that your younger animals have the most promise as you are moving your breeding program forward, does it challenge your breeding program to not have registered Nubians from your younger does for the year?
No.
You don't even think twice about it.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No. No. They need to be registered because they need to be shown. And if they're not going to be shown in my herd, then they can, be sold as culls or, as pets, basically. I'm just a show herd, honestly. I just for show. And of course, I'm breeding for more milk because I need more milk to show, and better structural. Mammary system and bodies, but I'm not doing it for the milk because I can't make cheese or anything here. So it's just strict for, they have to be registered to show or they go.
Well, has it ever backfired? Like, are there reasons to not use a boar buck on your dairy goats?
No,
That's
no.
easy.
And
So,
breeding them just to evaluate the first fresheners and moving on.
well, and the nice thing is most boar bucks throw pretty, like, decent sized kids for a first freshener.
Actually, the majority of them out of the first fresheners are kind of tiny. They're not
Yeah, that's
small,
what I
small.
mean. Like, they're decent size, like easy for a first freshener. Yeah.
I honestly rarely have an issue. Rarely have an issue with my first fresheners kidding to the boar kids. They come out really good size for me. I've been extremely happy.
Now I kind of want to ask on this, and I don't know if you've seen anything about this, but I feel like there's a wives' tale, and there might be some actual scientific literature about it, but I could be completely off in left field about this. But I've always heard that there's a wives' tale that the buck that you breed to influences the production of a doe that year. And so breeding to boar, because he's not this very dairy buck, is going to influence production. And since you milk test, have
Yeah,
you seen
no,
anything?
it. I no, honest to God, no. And when that first started coming out, and it was mainly the dairy bulls. If you use the beef bull on your dairy doe or your dairy cows, then your production was going to be low. So it was a big concern for a while. It really was. It was a concern for a while, and I did worry about it. But honestly, I've not seen anything. I've not seen anything, so I'm no difference in my does that freshen to the dairy or freshen to the boar. It's supposed to
Well,
be a gene or genetic thing, so I don't know.
that's, I mean, come on. That is, to me, I've never heard this, first of all, but to me, the first thing I thought of was old dairy guys when they saw that there's guys using Angus on these Holsteins and they're trying to preserve, how
Right.
dairy's been for 100 years. So now they're starting this little wives' tale up, trying to get
Exactly.
people scared from using it.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. Exactly. Right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's gotta be.
Yeah.
That's like, that's some tinfoil
Right.
hat stuff right there.
Yeah.
That's like if your doe has a single buck, she's supposed to produce more. I've heard that somewhere, I forget now. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that's true.
Produce what?
It produce more milk.
A single buck. No, I've
Yep.
not heard. And the
Neither have
more
I.
kids you usually hear, the more kids you have, the more milk you produce. So
That's math.
I get mad when they have a single because I'm thinking, oh no, I got to work hard to get you up to a decent milk amount,
Yep.
capacity.
I got a
So,
couple of that this year. Danielle, did you have any other parting words before we wrap this up?
no, I just really appreciate this conversation, Lisa, and I just.
Thank you.
This is exactly what we were hoping for when we started putting together this episode and having this conversation, because it is something that, and maybe it's just, again, kind of the regional aspect of it, but there's almost this, oh, we don't do this, and
Right.
why would we do
Yeah.
this? And bringing you
It
on, and I mean,
was hard to do at first when I started doing it. I had a lot of people in the area that just really gave me a hard way to go about it. I had a hard time with my kids taking the crosses to the fair. I mean, to the point that the first year that we did it, they were going to protest my kids taking boar crosses, and the fair language was market weathers. That didn't say dairy weathers or meat weathers. It was just market weathers. And I, but after about 3 or 4 years of having them, and I was like one of the very first people in Ohio that had a boar buck, I had a lot of those naysayers, give me a call and say, hey, do you have any extra boar cross weathers? We're having that in our county now. So it caught on pretty quick. after they really started, hitting the rings out here. So.
No, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It's almost like this no-brainer, and it creates a market for kids. It prop that it makes it easy, workload manageable. And I mean, ultimately, it is going to the food industry and putting it back into that food supply chain in a different way. And I just think it's genius. And having you on, because I mean, you were very humble and kind of your herd success and all of that, but you are not just a backyard breeder who is putting goats out there and saying, oh, okay, I have this buck to sell. And if you were to post him on Facebook, everybody would be like, oh God, why are like that buck should be weathered? Like, that is why. Like, no, your herd is the genetics are. Have the records that your animals are in herds across the country doing well, continuing to be successful, but you are still going this route and not just breeding Nubian to Nubian and selling the genetics. You have found this kind of perfect niche to work with you, and you're not afraid to send those animals in. So I just,
Right. Yes. Well, thank you. Yeah.
you were perfect for this conversation just because of that. That it's not that you're just somebody who's needing to develop your herd. Your herd's been there, it's been developed. You have that success, and yet you are still supplying the food supply in that way. And so this was just a really enlightening conversation and just
Good.
very insightful and starting to make me think about what we're doing here, even on a much
I
smaller
mean,
scale.
do you have the stockyards out where you live? I mean, raise some for the Easter market. Start off that way. At least
Yeah.
you have, a place to take them if you don't have a 4-H-er or somebody in your area that will buy them for their fair. You still have another avenue of getting rid of them.
Yeah, and they sell for a decent amount of money. I
They
shipped,
do.
oh, about 43 of them around that time and for at work for work and we made pretty good money on
Yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So
Yes. Yes.
I challenge anybody listening to comment on this post for this episode, your favorite goat recipe. I want to hear them because
You're
it's going to
hungry?
be, I'm hung. Well, it is lunchtime.
Sorry. I'm
And
hungry.
I want to try some good goat recipes, so hit me with what you got, folks. All right. Well, if people were looking to find you on the old interweb, where could they do that?
Facebook on Troubled Acres, or you can Google Troubled Acres Farm and go to my website. But it desperately needs updated, but at least it has contact information.
Perfect. Well, Lisa Ham Begley, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a
Thank you.
lovely conversation. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
And Danielle, if people want to find us on the old interwebs, where can they do that?
You can find us at dairygoatpodcast.com. We are on Facebook by searching Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast. We are on Instagram and TikTok by looking up Ringside Podcast. And as always, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to leave us a rating and a review. We appreciate it.
Yes. Well, everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
And we took out the Sonnen. We'll catch you on the next one. Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.